David Baker has just a little background for you guys. He served in the U.S. Army for a number of years and he's also served as a former law enforcement officer. He became aware of the energies around him through the deceased and lost souls he encountered through his work. Can you imagine in his work what he must have encountered? He kindly took on the task of counseling these lonely, desperate spirits and the family and friends that missed them. So he's been guided by good energies and angels to oust the bad, and is well informed on angel lore and demonology, which will be one of our interests this evening. He is currently running his own radio show called Beyond the Gate Radio, and is presently consulting on a number of projects, including in the movie industry. He's made his name giving psychic consultations and has given mediumistic guidance at old penitentiaries and haunted properties to increase awareness in his work and passion. So he's also a very positive and compassionate medium, very, very good energy, and he's also authored a book called The Spirit Garden: A Medium's Journey. Do we have David tonight? Do we have him on the line yet? Hi, David.
Yes. Hello,
Hello.
Carmen. Good evening.
Welcome. Hi.
Thank you for inviting me into your wonderful area of energy, information, and love. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you for coming. And it's such a great, you're such a brave man, a brave person to be practicing this type of work, the emotional energy involved. David, do you tell me, as an empath, because I could not do that as an empath or telepath, it's so overwhelming. Tell us a little bit how you got into this type of work, because you have a very, varied, very interesting background.
It starts as far back as physical memory goes to around three, I would guess, where my mom would put me in the crib so she could watch her afternoon soap operas, that I didn't want to go sleep, and out these people would come from the closet and play with me, and then they had to go, and I had to go sleep. I didn't want to, but when they left, I just went to sleep. And these people would disappear into the closet. And wherever I've lived growing up has either been haunted, or maybe I've saw spirits around there, wherever. And so in the 1960s, after I got military, I worked as night watchman, and I worked a lot of old buildings in San Francisco, and whoo, boy, are they haunted. So I decided to study psychic development back there in 1969 to 70, 71. And then I put it on hold, went back to the military, lived my life. It wasn't until I was in law enforcement, I worked in the jail, which was haunted. All kinds of stuff was happening. So since I worked on the night shift, during my lunch hour, I'd be bored, so I'd read a book. So I decided to do more research on ghosts, which led to research on psychics and mediums and all that. And then I found that I could put a label on what I have. And now this is back in the early 90s. And then I took some courses on it just so I could find out more about it. And I met people. Next thing you know, I was doing it starting around 2005 or so, somewhere around there. And I've been doing it ever since.
That's amazing. I must imagine, David, if I could just ask you, are there certain areas of the country that have more ghosts? Like, I would imagine, I guess, in certain areas where there were civil wars, and San Francisco's got a very intensive history with the fire and such. What would you say would be the most active areas in the U.S.?
There are actually many, but I would say New Jersey. I've gotten a majority of reports about haunted areas from the Revolutionary War and Indian burial grounds and other things. New Jersey, there's also the Alpha of Southern California, Catalina Island, which I just recently visited. And there's other places. California has a lot of haunted places, and pretty much every state has a lot, but I couldn't really tell you, since I don't know everything, which is the most haunted area. I wish I could.
Right. No, I can imagine. I mean, in terms of your experiences in looking after guarded and old buildings, when you were doing your mediumship work, would you say that you were more of an observer, or were you actually pretty much conversing with the with what you encountered as lost or souls? Were you able to get messages from them within you, or were you actually hearing like audio or visual phenomenon?
Got it. Okay. As a clairvoyant, I see them like a video, and they show me photographs, signs, and symbols. So that's clairvoyance. And then I also use claircognizance, which means it's like they're sending me sentences or paragraphs very quickly, which is like an instant transfer of telepathic information. Occasionally, I do get clairaudience, the voice or the sounds, and occasionally smells and feelings, but I'm not so much empathic, so I mostly see and get the messages in my head.
You must have some very old influences around you in terms of some of the history that is surrounding you. In terms of your mediumship, I take it that part of what you do is, as a psychic, you will talk to the deceased or to the family or friends of the departed. But I also believe I get the sense from you and your writing that you're actually counseling the deceased as well. Is that correct?
It kind of works both ways. You know, the people, when I'm doing mediumship reading for crossed over spirits, the family definitely needs some type of closure. But in spirits, generally, it depends. Every case is different. If there was a situation of abuse or some type of thing that happened in a deceased loved one's, the spirit's life, that they did not have closure with when they passed away, then they will also come and seek forgiveness. And so, yes, you might say it works for both parties.
Like a mediator.
That's right.
And what would you say are the modern applications for mediumship? Where, you know, you think about connecting with people and deceased people. How can this help us in the 21st century? How do you think it can apply to the average person? You're living in a condo. You're on the 22nd floor. And you don't feel there's a history around yet. How can you help? How can we be helped by somebody like you?
Okay, and are these people that live in a condo, what are they seeking? What type of help?
I imagine that a lot of the clients I speak to often imagine that they are somewhat haunted, even in their sleep, as in astrally. And as far as I know, it doesn't matter what the age of the building it is, right? For the most part, you're occupying that space. So it's the space, the area.
I'm glad that you trust me so much, because there are some mediums that, like Peter James, who's passed on now, famous Peter James, who only sees ghosts. And then there are some mediums that only see crossed over spirits. I guess I don't know if I'm cursed or blessed or what. I can see ghosts and crossed over spirits. And generally, I find it to be the case. In fact, even I lived in a new apartment back in the late 70s in San Francisco, a brand new apartment, and it was haunted. And I was thinking that, my God, you know, I wonder how old this building is or whatever, but come to find out, the building has nothing to do with it. It's the land. Whatever happened on the land 100 years ago or more or less, doesn't matter how many structures are there. If there's something or somebody hanging around there, they're going to stay there if they're drawn to that particular piece of property. So even if you're on the 50th floor, it doesn't matter.
That's correct. So I know that some people would have difficulty admitting to needing your help if they're not in an old, decrepit, and historically valuable building. But let's say if you could give us an idea as to what people living in older buildings experience and what your role is in being able to help them out. I believe that you went, just for those of you that want to know a little bit of background, is that correct, David? You were at Alcatraz 2 weeks ago giving talks or helping a client out or doing something, some consultation?
Well, actually, I was at Alcatraz a little bit longer ago. I was there a couple of times. And the second time I was given a tour of everything, including the off-limit areas. But the first time we went with a group of friends, we went on a rare night tour, and we had contact with some spirits there, got photographs and so forth. Really very interesting. But generally, and then I also help out. There's a place south of here called Colma where all the thousands of people are buried. They call it the city of the dead because there's more people buried there than there are live citizens. And when San Francisco was transformed during the pioneer days, many of those graves were moved down there. And there was an old folks home down there. And they called me down. Now, I tell my clients never to tell me, you know, anything. So I gave them a reading. They were totally happy. But then they kept staring at me. I said, what? And they said, we want you to take a walk, you know, through our complex. But we're telling the people that you were just a prospective client looking around. And that place had about six ghosts in it. And when I came back, I told them all the ghost names, and they concurred, and what they were doing and where they are and everything like that. But I want to point out that, you know, if I go to see a doctor who's a general practitioner, a family doctor, you know, if I have certain issues that he can't help with, he will refer me to others. So as a medium, I prefer to stick to mediumship and some psychic stuff, of course, and that's it. I prefer it not to go getting rid of ghosts and spirits for people or sending dark spirits to the other side. I can't do everything, so I have a few specialties, but I do have experience in different areas and knowledge of it. So I just want to let you know that if somebody does need help, then I can refer them to another medium that specializes in that particular area.
Exactly, and that's where David and I had some really interesting discussions, was that particular areas of interest were his experiences with people that he was networking with in terms of possession, referring them to people that could help them with spirit possession, and to help people understand, perhaps psychologically, the fear involved, or perhaps the anxieties involved, and perhaps assuaging them as to the extreme or lack of extreme nature of their situation. Because there's a lot of imagination involved with people that work with or that feel that they're haunted. Is that not correct, David?
Yes. No. If somebody is has a paranormal investigative group. Now, I believe that they should also have a medium with them too. You know, the more information, the better. But you should go there and investigate it and, you know, study the history of the property, investigate the people living there, see what the medium picks up on, and bring all the information together later on, of course. And then after you do the investigation, when you rule out the wind blowing, the air conditioner moving, the shades, or the pipes banging, or the building settling, and all those other kind of things. And then when you find evidence of something that cannot be possibly explained by any of those, then perhaps, you know what I mean? Because there's people that call some of my friends, oh, my house is haunted, haunted, you know, and maybe one out of 50 of those people would be a genuine haunt.
That's correct. So how do you determine that?
Well, for myself, all I have to do is just walk in here and I can tell them right away, or I can be on the phone with them and just tell them from the phone.
What happens to you?
For me, I can do it from anywhere. It doesn't matter. I don't have to touch a picture. I don't have to go into deep trance. I don't have to use instruments. All that they ask me, I look and I see and I tell them instantaneously. That's the way I work, but you know, everybody works differently.
So when you get information, for those of you that don't know how psychics work, some of us have gifts where we're able to interpret information, some of us analyze it, some of us are very clairvoyant, but very few of us actually get names and dates. So that's quite a feat, what you did, David, be able to get the names of the deceased persons in that area. Now, you are trying to, I imagine, when you're trying to figure out if something is haunted, what are the physical and emotional sensations you get from the spirit or from the place, the property of haunting?
Physical, I get something. When an energy is there, it touches my aura and sends like a little wave down, which hits my pineal gland and transfers to my nerves instantaneously. It's a light tingly sensation, which I can immediately identify that there's something here. I call it my ghost detector. And if it's a benevolent ghost, you know, I can feel, oh, it's all right. If it's a malevolent ghost, bad energy, then you get chicken skin or goosebumps, and it feels cold, and you feel, you know, like a sense of fear. Even though I'm not afraid, that's what comes over you, so you can tell if it's good or bad. But that's one thing. Secondly, then I'll focus in and see if it's male, female. Where are they? In front of me? Are they hiding in the back room? Or, you know, those are the first signs that I actually get. Plus, when you walk in, you can feel the energy in the place right away, if it feels heavy or not.
Is that irrespective of the spirit's profile? Like, I'm trying to think here, when you're trying to understand a spirit's emotional energy, as an empath, I'm very interested in this. What determines good or bad in him or her or it in this entity? And we're talking about, I guess, a ghost, not a departed spirit, which to some of you, like David was explaining, you will get a ghost, which is an energy that will haunt a property, like a data time stamp of the property, the information on the property, that may have some psychic residual, you know, effect. But spirit mediumship is different in that you can actually connect with the departed energy from the other side, like a parent or a pet or a child, and you're able to identify and talk to that person and have a congruent logical and emotional discussion with this departed spirit. So how can you judge and how can one figure out if the spirit is happy or not, if it's contented, if it's a good spirit?
Okay, good. I'm glad you said what you just said, because I'm going to mention two things. One is, if it's a magnetic imprint, and, you know, not an active or interactive haunting, but just something that goes over and over again, that's not active or interactive with people, where a spirit is seen doing the same thing over and over again, and you can't make contact with it. So if I see that layer, I push it to the side, and then I concentrate on the spirit. They may or may not be a bad spirit, but they might be angry or happy or confused, whatever. I pick up on those emotions, and so I try to figure out, well, is this person evil? You know, was he a serial killer when he died, or was he somebody that thought he was killed before his time and is upset about it, or, you know, whatever. I try to go deeper into what I'm saying and what the spirit is saying. I try to get a little information besides the feeling, because, you know, if it's anything other than happiness, then I'll know that right away. So then I'm going to have to try and separate, well, is this evil? Is this angry? Is it a bad person? What is it?
So when you feel a bad person, a bad spirit, what does it feel like to you?
Oh, that's the easiest. They can't hide from me, and they can't lie to me. That's the easiest thing for me. You know, that's where my empathic skills come in. Like I say, you know, I'm not that about feeling somebody that's having a heart attack or, you know, back pain or whatever. But when it comes to spirits, yes, that I get that instantaneously. I can tell, okay, there's something wrong here, or there's something right. But if it's just the energy that they extrude that comes out, that I can pick up on it right away. Okay, you know, it's not like happy waves of, you know, kittens and unicorns. These are like lightning bolts. So that's what I get first. That's the first sign I can tell that there's something wrong.
Okay. Wow. Do you get ever visual impressions of what they've gone through, or more audit, like telepathic impression?
Yep, I get that if they if I ask them and they're willing to tell me, and if they don't, then I'll try and focus in a little bit further back to see if I can pick up on what happened. So either you tell me or I'll look and see, you know. And sometimes it can be a challenge.
You know, it's fascinating. Most of us really want to know about the dispossessed, okay? And then I want to touch with you on the possessed. To me, the dispossessed would be those people, the wayward spirits that would be not put to rest, not counseled in through their passing, or that have had a difficult life. And you were talking about you probably had an extremely rich area or foundation as to which to source stories from. Do tell us a bit about what it feels like to be around people like that, and also how did it affect the people that were working in these areas, if you were in any areas that were still occupied by human employees and such. So what is your scariest experience, I guess, is what I'd like to ask.
Human spirits, talking about paranormal, what we used to call in the past supernatural. They can't possess you, but they can attach to you from time to time. A person's in a bar, which attracts a lot of people that are dead that used to be addicts. And the person would go in the bar and say, you know what, I'm not that much of a drinker, but something just came over me. I can't control it. And I drank all this booze, and I keep coming here, and I don't know what's going on. I can't stop it. That's an example of a human spirit attachment, a ghost. And then now, if you're talking about the preternatural deals with non-human entities, i.e. demons, jinn, you know, different things like that, debooks, and that's a totally different story.
Do tell. But, please, go on. Tell us about, they seem like two very, actually there's many different aspects to our work. One would be, in terms of demons and angels, have you ever known any property be haunted by an angel? For those of us that wonder if it could ever get any worse, can it ever get any better? Do you know what I mean? Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry. I pushed the wrong button.
That's actually, okay. We have that happen here from time to time, too.
I've actually been around people's homes that, you know, are beautiful people or light workers, and I say, my God, you have a lot of angels around you, and sometimes I can actually see the lights, too. In around churches, I can see the same thing. So, yes, you know, I guess angels really don't haunt like other entities do. It's just that, you know, those people ask for that and talk to them and use them, and they're of love and light are their intentions. So the angels will tend to come around them, and a person can have as many angels as they want, because somebody said, well, there's, you know, 7 billion people on earth, how can we all have 10,000 angels if we need them, because we're afraid to fly or something like that. And I tell them that, you know, our Creator's love is infinite for us, so why wouldn't He create an infinite amount of angels for any of us that we should call upon?
So you needn't actually worry about whether they're in the space or not. You can always call upon them, which is a nice point.
Well, so yeah, because you have free will, and they're not allowed to.
Ghosts are fixed. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, you have free will, and angels are not allowed to intervene in your free will. Except in one case, I know that if it's not your time to die, then they can intervene and save you. But other than that, they won't do anything unless you ask them to, because they're not allowed to interfere with your free will. But once you open the door and ask them, then they will. But know this, if you ask any other entity, invite them in the door, then it might be good, it might be bad.
You know, and then this is, brings us up to a question that is just being posed to me. So you do all this work to come in and to possibly interpret the spirit's feelings or see what its motivations are. What happens when you've established that it doesn't want to go? Then what? Do you make it more comfortable for both parties?
Yeah, if it's a human spirit that doesn't want to go, how do I know that it's not part of their path, their learning path? When they come, we come here to learn something, right? How do I know that they weren't meant to stay on as a ghost for a while too, as part of their learning? So who am I to say that they must move? Now, that's in the case of if the ghost that's around is not doing any harm to anybody. But, you know, like they're a happy ghost, you know, if they don't want to go into the light, why should I force them? If they don't want to, and maybe there's a certain reason, eventually they all leave anyway. But if there's one that's really troublesome, then I would encourage the people, you know, to clear the house, say prayers, light candles, talk to the spirit, take your power, and send them to the light and explain that we own the house now, and, you know, you did, but you're deceased, you need to move on, you don't belong here, blah, blah, blah. So
it's a very human tendency to hang on to things, isn't it? So to some extent, what you're probably dealing with, I think to a large extent, are human ghosts, human or animals. And then would you say that entities such as, because I would say that they would be territorial, right, even in their passing, after their passing. In terms of entities, which is what we're so fascinated with, of course, as well, you were mentioning the jinn, that's the J-I-N-N, that's the Arabic origin for the devil, and the darkest and in man, and then, but it's actually an entity. And then you have the, you have a special interest in biblical lore as well, and I have such an interest in Asian demons as well, but that would be probably of a much, much different historical value. Do tell us a little bit about what you know about, first, I guess, the angelic hierarchy. And for those of you that haven't checked out his website, he's got a lot of information on there on the different names of angels, the different angels that can be even applied in our modern lives, ones that you've never heard of, and the demon hierarchy, of which I don't believe there is as many and that have been named. Isn't that correct?
Okay, all angels and demons, okay. Demons were formerly angels. And they're, both of them share hierarchies the same. In other words, when they were thrown down from heaven, there are 9 hierarchies of angels, you know, at least well known. From highest to lowest, there is a seraphim and cherubim, thrones, dominions, virtues, powers, principalities, archangels, and angels. The superior hierarchies are more powerful and intelligent than the inferior ones, because some angels from each of the 9 hierarchies sinned and transformed themselves into demons. A demonic hierarchy exists. In other words, there are demons that are principalities, virtues, powers, etc. Even though they are demons, they retain their particular angelic power and intelligence. That's why they're very powerful. However, this is really going to get you. If Lucifer was the most high, most powerful angel, Seraphim, and outranked Archangel Michael, how could it be that Archangel Michael or any other angel can win against him? Well, St. Thomas Aquinas says that even though it would seem logical that certain of the higher demons may seem to be superior to the lower angels due to their different natural powers, even in a fallen state, it's not true. However, that demons are stronger than angels ever. An angel who is inferior in a natural order presides over demons, although these may be naturally superior, he says, because the power of divine justice to which the good angels cleave is stronger than the natural power of the demons. St. Thomas seems to apply that distinction to the whole angelic hierarchy, namely that even the lowest angel is more powerful than the strongest demon.
That's really comforting, and that can be probably, that's the power of good, and it would be of a more logical system. I would say that in terms of angels, they seem to be motivated by ideals. And in our minds, I think the devils would be motivating our emotional base instincts. When I think of a demon, I don't think necessarily of order or logic. I think of chaos and emotional chthonic desire. And so with that, I would say as well that it would just make absolute, apart from goodness, right, just sense that the angels would be more organized.
Yeah, that's correct. And I don't know if you want me to mention about one particular person that I saw that was possessed, and then mention a bit about the stages of demon possession.
Absolutely. Well, I'm just going to absolutely ask you about who the head demon really is. Is that Satan? Or is there anybody else involved? That's an odd question, but we always try and peg it on one guy. Does he have an army?
Go ahead.
Yeah, tell us a bit about the demons.
Okay, kind of like, what is the difference between Lucifer, Satan, and the devil? Lucifer, yes. Which means morning star, was the angelic name of the angel before he rebelled against God and became a demon. And I say angel because while most theologians consider Lucifer to be synonymous with Satan, some think that he is a demon distinct from Satan. We also take it as given that Lucifer was the highest angelic nature created by God. God made Lucifer magnificent in his nature, and he corrupted himself. The word devil is used also to mean demon or the devil or Satan. But Satan would be given as the ruler of them, and under him is minions, the devils. He has like generals and other soldiers, which they call legion. And usually when they attack a person, there's not just one, there's a bunch of them that gang up on others.
Yeah, and we were talking about that. I wanted to ask you, when do good angels go bad? Are they born as angels and they remain that way all their angelic existence, or do they transform, and can they elect to become demons? And then that's where I want to bring you into the process or the idea of possession. All demons, are they born that way?
They're all born good. Do you want me to tell you a little bit about what happened there?
Yes, please.
Okay, most people call any kind of supernatural. Okay, I'll skip on that. What is a demon? Demon is a supernatural or a spiritual being of an angelic nature that has been condemned for eternity due to his rebellion against God. A demon is an evil spirit. And why was there a rebellion? It may seem surprising that some angels would choose to hate God, but we need to understand that those who rebelled saw God no longer as good as the good, but the oppressor of their freedom. Hate was born as their wills resisted the call to God, held fast to the decision to leave the Father's house. And so what happens was they rebelled against God. They were thrown down from heaven, and that's it. That's it. The angels that remained will always be loving angels serving God and us. There is no changes. Once that happened, no changes.
Okay, good. That's great to know. So once you have an angel, it's good to go.
Yes.
And it's pretty much assigned, and that you won't expect, an angel to backstab you at a later date, lore or biblical stories could evolve, and we could be at a midpoint in the Bible, and goodness knows, but maybe Ariel one day will decide to join the rebellion, so that's good to know for those of you that like your angels. They're not going to go anywhere. They're good. They'll stay with you. And David, so keeping that in mind, the idea of possession, what would that mean to you? Tell us a bit about that. Because for those of you that want to know a bit about David, David's going to give us a bit of background on his experiences with demon possession and the people that have survived it. Is that correct?
Well, I've known by hearsay those who have survived it, but I haven't known anybody personally that has, even though I've known some that have actually been possessed.
What would be the difference? Like, tell us a little bit about what a possession looks like, how it feels, what defines it as different from, say, a bad day, drug addiction, rage, mental illness. What would possession be?
Excuse me, Carmen. I didn't want to interrupt you, but before, I mean, this sounds. I want to take Doug needs to take a commercial, and I want to hear this from the beginning.
Oh,
so I'm sorry.
Okay.
Thanks,
no problem. David. We're just going to put you through to our commercial, and we'll be one moment, please.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com?
Hi, okay, David, we're back, and now we're going into the most interesting part of your experiences. Go on. Please tell us about demon possession.
Okay, you know, if a person is possessed or oppressed, any of the symptoms that you just mentioned can occur to a person, and they won't. Generally, they do not know they're possessed, and generally, they will not be aware of the actions they've taken when the controlling spirit, you know, decides to come into action and do their work. And before, if a family brings a person to somebody to see if they're possessed, they generally would see a medical doctor and see how they are medically fit, check on drug history and all that, and then go see a psychologist. And if the psychologist states that there's a condition that they cannot explain by psychology, then they will see a priest who will then find certain signs on this person, you know, to see if they're possessed. Like, I'm not going to give away a whole bunch of stuff because, you know, a lot of this stuff shouldn't be spoken about. But, you know, if the priest is talking to the individual, and they say that they're going to put holy water on them, so just relax. And they take out some water that is not blessed holy water, just plain water, and put it on the person, and nothing happens. Okay. But if they start screaming and all, then that's a sign that the person is faking. And if they take out the real holy water and put it on them, make the sign of a cross, for example, and they start screaming and it burns or whatever, that's a sign. Another sign is levitation. Speaking Aramaic, a language they probably didn't know, and even speaking it backwards, or Latin, saying things about a priest or somebody that they could possibly not know, or talk about future events that nobody could possibly know. There's many different ways to know. Supernatural strength, of course, those are different signs there. Now, the movie The Exorcist by William J. Blatty, was actually not about a possessed girl, but a boy to protect his identity. And what happened here, now this is just because I know you're going to ask me, because I'm psychic, well, how people get possessed. Here's just one example. This young man was playing with the Ouija board with his aunt, who practiced witchcraft and so forth. She passed away, and one day he was playing with the Ouija board to try and get in contact with her, but not being as well trained as she was, a demon can lie and deceive. They'll do anything they can. If you happen to be unlucky enough to get that instead of a good spirit. And he lied and said, yes, I'm your aunt. So he invited it in, Yep, that's what opened the door right there. It turned out to be a demon. So, you know, you have to be careful. A young man that contacted me for a reading, and this is why I got my resources, because I didn't have any, now I do, you know, referrals. This young man said he'd been playing with a Ouija board late at night. He was, 19 years old, and said that a spirit came in. I was an Indian and said, I'm your spirit guide. Why don't you smoke marijuana, do this and do that? Hey, that's a bad sign already. If there's anything negative attached to it, close the door, bye-bye. But this kid didn't know any better, so he did all that. And then he said, they beat me up at night. They sexually harassed me, threw me out of bed. They scratched me. And so, you know, I told this man, I'll see if I can find somebody to help, but I can't have you over here or help you. And then he contacted my wife. And then another medium was staying with us for a while because we were doing an expo. And she was contacted, and she said yes, because she said, oh, I have helped people get rid of spirits before. And I told her, maybe in somebody's house they had a ghost or something, but not this. You're not trained for it. Oh, it's too late. I already invited them. So, I have a room out in the back of my property, which I call the reading room or the injury room. She's going to do it out there. I told her, take a cell phone. If there's a problem, you know, call me. So, I did everything I had to do to protect my property, which I did. And the parents came and dropped the kid off. We went in the back, and a few minutes into the reading, I got a call, and I went back there. And she's saying, yeah, Archangel Michael's going to help you. And I said, no, you're not a demonologist. I said, you got to stop this now. And the kid was getting angry. His face turned red. And then some type of distortion took place to where he started to look like a different person, and he stood up. So I, you know,
so
put out my energy.
So were you there in person? I'm sorry to interrupt. Were you there in person?
There in person.
Wow.
And I asked him, you know, just relax. And I told him, you got to stop the reading now. And I looked at him as he was getting angry. The whites of his eyes and his pupils expanded, turned black, and his eyes, whew, were 100% black. And we had to stop this and get him out of there, and we did. And that scared her. Now, when you do something, this is why, you know, it's not my calling. There's always repercussions. Now the demon is aware of you. She eventually moved to Australia. She was horseback riding, was thrown off the horse and into a coma and almost died. And I was talking to her, and I picked up on that. And I said, that's a repercussion from that. And she said, strange you should say that, because really scary things have been continuously happening ever since I moved down here. But anyway, stages of demonic possession. What are the levels of the devil's activity leading to possession? Well, there are many assessments of demonic activity, but the simplest scheme to describe this work, and this is from the Roman ritual, the demon's work is a triad of temptation, oppression, and obsession. These three kinds of demonic activity go from the least intrusive to the most intrusive, and represent differing degrees of loss of freedom for the afflicted person. Temptation is an attempted dialogue where the person's freedom remains intact. Oppression is an attack from the outside, which limits but does not take away the person's freedom. And obsession is an attack from the inside, which severely restricts or harasses the individual's freedom. Possession is different from obsession only by degree. It is the highest degree of obsession in which the person loses most of his freedom at any given time of attack. Let me simplify this for the listeners that don't know a lot about this. We can liken the kinds of demonic activity to an enemy army that lays siege to a city. Temptation is like the enemy standing outside the city gates, asking the occupants to come out and talk. Oppression is like the enemy bombarding the city from the outside with shells and mortars. Obsession is when the enemy breaches the walls and gets inside the city, taking it block by block, but is not yet in full control of it. This is sometimes called partial possession. Finally, full possession is when the enemy is fully inside the city and has taken near or full control of the body. Although this state of full demonic control is rare, and truly is, it is nonetheless real and extremely dangerous to the spiritual and bodily well-being of the individual.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
It sounds to me, this is such a fascinating image, and we're just looking at in the talk room, everybody's kind of aghast and stunned, and we're getting images of Dante's Inferno and armies coming to the gates and angels coming down. It was those beautiful images you get. Can you tell me, do you think, and someone asked this question, are they all of God, for one? And if that's the case, why did God create two warring sides? And then my question would be, but are they capable of making their own decisions? Do the angels and demons have free will? And do you know where I'm getting with this? Like, do you think?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Okay, no. When God created something physical, I'm talking about, because his home, his or her home, and I say his or her because we are created, man and woman, in their image in Genesis, it states. But when that home is created, it's pure love, closest to God you can get. But, you know, for us to spiritually progress and learn and get closer to God, if that's our objective, and to be well-rounded spirit, you know, he created school for us, or this physical realm. Now, for you, you know, if you were in a snowstorm, that's all you'd know. You wouldn't know anything else. So he had to create, you know, light and darkness, night and day, and all that stuff. It just came. It wasn't created on purpose to hurt anybody. It's just that the natural way that this could be held together, there has to be aspects of good and bad and all those different things. Every creature he created is of love and good. But, you know, the angels, as I said, rebelled. And that's the way it is. Now, we're given a conscience and feelings and so forth. So in our intellect, while we're here, we can decide what is good and what is bad.
But they don't have that. So we have free will.
Angels
David,
don't have free will.
David, we have 2 minutes left for our show. I want to make sure that we can get you situated here in terms of, like, this is such a fascinating story. And obviously you've encountered a lot of this in your work. You also are a psychic, and you wrote this book. And tell us a little bit about the message of your book, please.
The message of my book is, not giving it away, I kind of tell how things began with me and how it ran with me all my life, but you know, I kept pushing it aside. You know, okay, I know it's true, but I couldn't talk about it because in school, people said I was crazy, so I shut up about it for years, but I would always see stuff until I had a break in my life and I started studying it. Then in the military, I got out, and then certain things happened. I became homeless. I lost everything. I lost everything, and I was going to jump off a bridge when I had an amazing thing happen to me, a bright light, and messages came to me very strong. Led me to a church, people helped me, and it took a few years, and I got back on my feet. And then years later, I finally came to a point to where I can do this, and I did it. So pretty much there's information in the book that shows people never give up. If you want something, go for it, and you'll get there. And then there's information there about the gifts, too.
Oh, David, thank you so much. And I mean, that comes from a very special place, because it's not a greedy place or a place of manipulation. It's a true experience. And you've also spent a good part of your life nurturing living people. So thank you very, very much, David. We really enjoyed having you on our show. And I would love to send our guests to your website as well. So just so that you could get more information on David, his website is www.mediumdavidb.com. And so that would be pretty much how self-evident as it sounds. David, thank you. Thank you so much for coming.
My pleasure.
And it would be really interesting to talk to you sometime again about more of this. And we will stay in touch.
We certainly will. Thank you very much. God bless you, everybody too. Here, and all the listeners, too. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh. Hello. My name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.